So there's two verses today, last week. 17:1-5, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14. Last week, was 109:1-10. This is 111:1-12. So 109:1-10 was this is the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 17. Verses, today's verses are 111 and 112. And last week, we found...
It's 112, 113.
Where did it say? Oh, so somebody discussed the 111 already? Okay. Good. And then they just put only one verse, although the discussion is on two verses. Okay. So we find ourselves in the, well, this is the 17th chapter, Krishnadas Kaviraj discussing the pastimes, giving an overview about pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes Mahaprabhu was chanting in ecstasy. Sometimes he was demonstrating his absorption in Krishna Leela and Vishnu Avatar Leela. One time in this chapter, one time, Krishnadas Kaviraj says that Mahaprabhu exhibited the symptoms of Nisinga. He had requested that the 1,000 names of Vishnu be recited. So when they came to Nrsinga, he captured the mood of Lord Nrsinga. So this chanting of Krishna's names, Nam Sankirtan, this is the process of Mahaprabhu, the process that he recommends for this age. Sankirtan is generally considered to be Nam Sankirtan, but also it includes Leela, meditating on Krishna's Leelas, like Ratiyatra. We do the Ratiyatra. This is a Leela of Krishna. So this is how the Leelas come into play. There are many names for Krishna: Govinda, Gopala, Giri Govardhan. So all these names indicate Krishna's Leelas. So now, this astrologer, Krishnadas Kaviraj, is mentioning that an astrologer approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to do a service. So he said, "I'll tell you about your former life." So he said, "In your former life, you were the shelter of all creation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full of all opulences. You are now the same Personality of Godhead that you were in your previous birth. Your identity is inconceivable eternal happiness." So then there was a slight problem with this description. Mahaprabhu said, "So when the astrologer was speaking so highly of him, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped him and began to smile. 'My dear sir,' he said, 'I think you do not know very clearly what I was. For I know that in my previous birth, I was a cowherd boy.'" And these are last week's verses. I'm getting us in the picture. Last week's verses. "In my last birth, I was born in the family of cowherd men, and I gave protection to the calves and cows. Because of such pious activities, I have now become the son of a Brahmana." And then also, yes. So, not just that Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not just that he is Vishnu, not just that he is full of opulences, but that he is also Krishna, who is playing with the cowherd boys and the cowherd girls. So last week also, the astrologer said, what I saw in meditation was full of opulence, and therefore I was confused. So this is, today is what? 113? What does it say? 112, 113. Okay. So 112. So the astrologer said, what I saw in meditation was full of opulence, and therefore I was confused. Sarvagya. So the astrologer is described as sarvagya. Sarva means all, gya means knowing. So this, which means all knowing, meaning that he could see past, present, and future. Kohe, he said, ame dhyane, in ami, I, dhyane in my meditation, dhyan, dekhila, I saw, deki, deka means to see, tahate aishwarya deki. So it was, I saw this aishwarya, I saw this opulence, and pampara haila, I became confused. So Prabhupada said, it appears that the astrologer not only was a knower of past, present, and future through astrological calculation, but was a great meditator as well. Therefore, he was a great devotee, and he could see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the same personality as Krishna. He was puzzled, however, about whether Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were actually the same person. So this verse, 113, I am certain that your form and the form I saw in my meditation are one and the same. If I see any difference, this is an act of your illusory energy. And Prabhupada comments in his purport. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahyanya. In the vision of a perfect devotee, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a combination of Radha and Krishna. One who sees Lord Chaitanya to be different from Krishna is under the illusory energy of the Lord. It appears that the astrologer was already an advanced devotee, and when he came into the presence of the Supreme Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became perfectly self-realized and could see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are one and the same person. One and the same Supreme Person. So I want to transition into something a little different. Our movement is a preaching movement. This is Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And last week I presented something about Sankirtan. Part of Sankirtan is to preach Yare Dekha Tare Kaho Krishna Upadesh. Krishna Upadesh, Prabhupada defines Krishna Upadesh. Of course, Krishna means Krishna. Upadesh means teachings. The teachings, the Upadesh, Prabhupada divides into two areas. One, Bhagavad Gita, the other, Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent his disciples, or sent his associates, Nityananda Prabhu, Haridas Thakur, Gadadhar Das, and others to preach, particularly Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam. But when Prabhupada came, and not just Prabhupada, but Bhakti Siddhanta Prabhupada, when they preach in the West, they start with Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Mahaprabhu teaches Bhagavad Gita. Everything is based on Bhagavad Gita. These are Krishna's words. But in general, many people in India and in Northeast India at that time, 500 years ago, many people understood something about Bhagavad Gita. And Bhagavad Gita was commonly taught in the schools and the gurukulas, but maybe Bhagavatam a little less so. So we emphasize Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the more advanced study. So I want to discuss Bhagavad Gita a little bit. And I want to offer something. You can take it or leave it. You can decide whether it's useful for you or not. But I want to offer something that I feel is useful to preach, to teach others about Krishna, about Bhagavad Gita, about the value of Bhagavad Gita. So I'm going to speak a little bit from second, third, and fourth chapters of Bhagavad Gita, not to teach you, because I feel genuinely that you already know. Maybe you don't know, you haven't memorized particular verses, or not everyone has studied exactly, but because you come into association with devotees and you're practicing Krishna consciousness, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're hearing from devotees, you know. So I'm presenting on that assumption. And what I want to present is something that may be useful to you. If you hand somebody a book, you can say, this is about the, what I'm going to present is about the environment. Do you have one of those books? Rupa is going to be handing out some of these books. This is a booklet that I've written on the environment and the Gita. So in this booklet, I show how the Gita, mainly second, third, fourth chapters, but it's the Krishna consciousness philosophy. It's focused on just those, maybe even second and third chapter. How the Gita presents not just a solution, but the solution to environmental issues. So if you present somebody with a book, you can say that Krishna has the solution to environmental issues. Now, it sounds a little bit, if you just hear it, it sounds like, well, yeah, this sounds cultish, or this sounds outrageous, hyperbole. But really, it's not. So let's start from the beginning. How much time do we have? This is 8:05, so what? Sorry? 8:45. Okay, excellent. So, starting at the beginning, greed. We're going to, for the purpose of this, for the purpose of my presentation, I want to throw out, for the time being, any sort of discussion that you, any preconceptions you may have about environmental issues or environmental solutions. So the first idea is that the basic assumption that we're making here is that there are huge environmental issues that are caused by humans. Humanity is causing environmental problems like species annihilation, deforestation. Of course, global warming is controversial, so we can put that aside, but causing resource depletion, pollution of the oceans, of the air, of the rivers. So even without controversial issues, it's an established fact that humans are causing environmental problems. So, and this is a threat to humanity. So what I'm presenting here is that, and it's not just me, it's that greed is the problem, human greed. And many people like Stephen Hawking, you can look at online and see this, Stephen Hawking has said on numerous occasions that greed will be the destruction of humanity. Pope Francis said in 2014 that God, as we know, the Catholic Church feels that God will always forgive us. So he said, God will forgive us, but Mother Earth will not. It was a very interesting statement from the Pope, actually. One of my friends, when I gave him that quote, he said, really? He said, the Pope said Mother Earth will not. It's very treating Mother Earth in a very personal way. So, as if she were a personality, which she is. So, this idea of greed is not some concoction I'm making. It's not something that's out of the ordinary. Human greed, this is causing the problem. This is what's causing, not the problem, but it's what human greed is causing immense problems. Resource depletion, obviously. Deforestation, obviously. Pollution, obviously. Human greed. So there's a concept that addresses this idea, sustainability. Sustainability in general means that when humans take from nature, there should be a means for replenishment. Sustainability means that there should be balance in nature. And the opposite of sustainability is to overuse, is to take that which can't be replenished. So overuse is greed. So more important, more common is the word sustainability. It's a positive word. It's what people, what environmentalists like to put forward. They like to talk about sustainability, things where there has to be sustainability. People don't like to talk about greed. They don't like that word because it's unsolvable. If you say greed, it seems to be unsolvable. Nobody talks about greed. Religions talk about greed, but they just say, don't be greedy. So, greed is not a popular word. Although Pope Francis used it, Stephen Hawking used it, but still it's not as popular as sustainability. But the opposite of sustainability is overconsumption or greed. So, we're going to talk about greed. Now, I'd like for you to substitute the words sense gratification for greed. We have this concept of kama, lobha, krodha. We have this concept of kama, which means sense gratification, and lobha, which means greed. But these are sisters. If you study the literature, you'll see that sense gratification and greed are practically the same. So greed is in common use in the world. Sense gratification is something that we use in our among ourselves or in Prabhupada's books. But just in your mind, if I say greed, think sense gratification. Believe me, it's just fine. You can make that leap. So let's go to the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And first of all, I want to say that there's often a discussion. No, just throw that out. Never mind. Let's go to the Bhagavad Gita. Now, what's the name of the second chapter? Anybody know? Sorry? Contents of the Gita summarized. Very good. And there's another name for Sankhya Yoga. Okay, that's the last time you're allowed to answer. Because can you give her a book? Because you already have one. So along with this little discourse, I'm handing out other presents. to experts on the Bhagavad Gita, except Govinda, because he's like so way far ahead. So the contents of the Gita summarized, second chapter, Sankhya. So in this Sankhya chapter, this analysis chapter, we learn a little bit about Sankhya. It's just a little summary of Sankhya. So what are some of the basic concepts of Sankhya? Somebody, what do you think? What are the basic concepts in... No, you have one. Perfect, material ingredients. He gets one too. So material ingredients. So what is the body comprised of? What, according to Sankhya, what makes up the body? What is this body? Modern science says atoms, but Sankhya particularly emphasizes certain components of the body. Earth, air, fire, water. That's a good answer. Three modes of nature influence the body. Yes, those earth, air, fire, water, these are the... These are certainly the elements. And yes, you're correct in saying that the three modes of nature influence every being. But I'm looking also for one more. Knowledge acquiring senses, and you missed the working senses. So this is the answer that I'm looking for. The others were also correct, but I'm going to give what? You handed out two and you're finished already? Oh, there's another one. So these senses, these knowledge acquiring senses, they make up the body and the working senses. They also comprise the body. The body, according to Sankhya, is comprised of knowledge senses and working senses. So now comes the problem. There is a problem that Krishna is going to present in the second chapter. Because in this world, corresponding to these senses, there are... sense objects. So corresponding to the senses, there are sense objects. So the sense objects, things that we see, we can basically say that these are roughly equivalent to Maya. Of course, Maya is more than that, but for our intents and purposes, the Vishayan, the sense objects, are Maya. So we have these senses. They're attracted to the sense objects. It's kind of like, almost like a magnetic attraction. We are spontaneously, in this world, we are spontaneously attracted to the sense objects. I should say that we are attracted because it's the senses that are attracted to the sense objects, and we identify with those senses. We think of ourselves as this body, akara. That word, eka akara, means the body. So we identify with this body, with these senses, but actually we are the mind. Is that right? How does that go? What?
The soul.
The soul. You have one already. You can't. You can't answer. Why are you answering? I'm kidding. So, we're the soul. So where does the mind fit? Let's see. What's the hierarchy? Let's discuss. You can't answer anymore. What's the hierarchy? We have the senses, and then what comes next? The what? The mind? Yes, she gets one. And then after the mind? No, you can't answer if you have a book. Did you get one, right? You didn't get one. Oh, there you go. So the intelligence and then the soul. So this is the hierarchy. So the mind is a very critical element in this concept, in the concept that Krishna is presenting here. The mind is the crucial element. The mind can be the friend, or the mind can be the enemy. And the mind, of course, the mind and the intelligence, Krishna describes that the mind and the intelligence are, and the senses, are seats of lust. So lust, the word lust is kama. In the Sanskrit, kama. Sometimes we have the misunderstanding that lust only means sex desire. It's often used in modern language to mean sex. But kama, which is also often used to indicate sex, but kama means simply desire. So what is that desire? There's a verse, dhyayato vishayan pungsa, sangasteshu pajayate, sangat sangjayate kama. So who knows the meaning of that verse? Who can give the rough? Yes. Yes, that's good. That's the point that I want. Oh, please, of course. She answered 100% perfect, and she was going on to 150%. So this desire, the dhyayato, from contemplating the objects of the senses. Dhyayato vishayan pungsa. Vishayan are the objects of the senses. So just by contemplating, just by thinking about them, just by maybe I'm looking around the room, I just glance at something, I think about it, I contemplate it just a little bit. And from that sangha, I want to have a little association with it. I want some contact, something. I want, my eyes want to associate. My eyes want to dwell on this object. And from that sangha, that dwelling or that association, kama. Sangat sangjayate kama. Kama. So this is my point. Kama is a sister of greed. Kama is sense gratification. So we think sense gratification. Well, we're not supposed to be attached to sense gratification. We always hear this. We're not supposed to be attached to sense gratification. We're supposed to be detached. Prabhu, be detached. Just this idea is so common in our day-to-day conversation about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But this is the basic dilemma that the yoga, all teachers of yoga, Patanjali, everyone, talks about this basic concept of kama, that arises from senses and their attraction to the sense objects. So this is nothing new to the Krishna consciousness process. This is the yoga dilemma. This is the dilemma that the Sankhya system presents. And this is Krishna's teaching that addresses that dilemma, that we are bound. And what happens after that? The next kamat, sanjayati, krodha, krodat, and then finally pranashyati, then destruction. So this is the maya. This is maya. This is the thing we're trying to become detached from. But we are all in sense gratification. We're all presented with this problem, that we are here in this world, that our senses are attracted to the sense objects. So what do we do to get out of this situation? We don't, actually, it's a misunderstanding that we don't go around and say, just be detached, Prabhu. Don't be attached. Just be detached. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. He talks about detachment. But he gives a solution. He is not so abrupt or rude. In other religions, in the Bible, Jesus teaches about greed. He says that we shouldn't be greedy. In Quran also, it talks about greed, shouldn't be greedy. The socialists complain, the capitalists shouldn't be greedy. The capitalists, I don't know, do they complain about greed? So everyone's complaining about greed. Everyone's saying, don't be greedy. People are saying, don't be attached. Don't be involved in sense gratification. But who's giving the solution? First of all, Krishna gives the analysis. Who has given this analysis? That this is the reason we have greed. We have greed because we're here in the world and we are soul, atma, and the senses that comprise our body are attracted to the sense objects. Who gives this analysis? I've studied this, and I want to hear who gives this analysis. Yeah, Rupa, you have an idea?
Nobody, but what's the solution?
What's the solution? I'm going to make you give away all your books. Somebody asked, we did this interaction in the other day. Rupa's playing the devil's advocate. So somebody said, did you practice this before class? And I said, yeah, for 40 years. So the solution is, what is the solution anyway? What does Krishna say in the, Govinda, you don't say anything now. What does Krishna say then? In the second chapter, he's talking about the problem, and he talks about the tortoise should withdraw its limbs. We should withdraw from sense gratification. You remember the analogy of the tortoise, where the tortoise withdraws its limbs? But then he doesn't just leave us there. He doesn't just say you have to be like this tortoise and withdraw your limbs. What does he say? How do we deal with this? We're left hanging on this second, third chapter. What? Yes, we can engage our senses. So what's... that's good. But... You we're not supposed to say, you have to give one back now. Yeah, she gets some book over here. We have to engage our senses in devotional service. Is that what you said? Okay, she gets one. Rupa ji, she gets one. No, she said in devotional service. She said we have to engage our senses and then... She said, in devotional service. We have to engage our senses in devotional service. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Somebody said out of turn. I forget who said that. So.
That sounds like work.
But wait a second. What do we call that? There's a technical term for that. What? Karma Yoga. There, that'll be easy to give him one, yeah. So Krishna, sometimes the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what is the name that Prabhupada gives? Karma Yoga. So the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita talks about Karma Yoga. So we have here the problem. Let's relate it back to the environment. Humans cause environmental problems. We're presenting, just like many experts present, that greed is the problem that causes these. Another word is overconsumption, lack of sustainability. Overconsumption means greed. Greed is caused by desire, sense gratification. Now we're getting into Krishna's analysis. Sankhya means analysis. So Krishna's analysis is, that we identify with this body, that the senses are attracted to the sense objects, and we're thus entrapped in Maya. So desire, kama, and greed become everything to us. And the solution then is we have a mind. Mind is right in the middle of this. The mind is being pulled by the senses to the sense objects. But our objective is to redirect the mind to the soul or the supreme soul. Excuse me, to Krishna. So the process then is karma yoga. Excuse me, which means to engage the senses in devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, in second and third chapter, there's another idea that's very closely interwoven with karma yoga. This is a little more advanced. You have to think very hard. What is this concept? I'm looking for something that's really wedded to karma yoga. Nishkama karma yoga? Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, she's very advanced. No, I'm thinking about something. Yeah, go ahead. She got the prize. Nishkama karma yoga. This is a component of bhakti. Unless sometimes devotees think of karma yoga as somehow akin to karma. Or when they think of karma yoga, they're thinking of some kind of mixed desires. She's mentioned the karma yoga that's really a component of bhakti. Nishkama karma yoga. This is what devotees aspire to do. So we were talking about sangat sangjayate kama. So she says nishkama karma yoga. It means the karma yoga that's without desire. Okay, that's an important item. But I want to come up with something else. One other concept that's very closely associated with karma yoga that's mentioned in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, but you know, all right, you have to give your book back now. You don't need it anyway because you know everything. I'm kidding. Yes. Pardon? Detachment, yes. We're supposed to be detached. But the word I'm looking for that's closely associated with karma yoga is sacrifice. Yajna. Prabhupada explains the process of karma yoga something like this. I'm paraphrasing. Karma means to work. So everyone works. Work. So what comes from work? When we work? Fruits. They said results. Who said results? You got one already. So the results. You said results? Yeah? Okay. No, she didn't get one. She's greedy for one. So, results. Karma phal means results. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's the fruits of work. When we work, then fruits come. Then what do we do if we are a karmi, or if we are stuck in Maya? What do we do with those results? Kama, yes, we enjoy our desires. Whatever we desire, we enjoy. Kama. We attempt to enjoy. Yes, sir. So, but what do we do if with those karma phal? What do we do with those results? If we are following Krishna in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Huh? Engage in Krishna service is called yajna. You have one already? Yeah. It's called offering and devotional service. It's also called yajna. So that's the technical term, sacrifice or yajna. That's our offering. So the reason why that word yajna is used is because yajna is associated with the enjoyer who lives in the heart. Krishna says in the fifth chapter, bhoktaram yajna tapasang. Bhoktaram yajna. So bhokta means the enjoyer, and Krishna is seated in the heart as the enjoyer. So when we get the fruits of our work, who do we meaning those of us stuck in Maya, who do we think is the enjoyer? Us, yes. We think that we are the enjoyer. We meaning this body. We think that this body is the enjoyer. But actually the enjoyer is bhoktarang yagyatapasang. So Krishna is the enjoyer in the heart. So karma is work. Karma phal, results of work. Take the results, offer them to Krishna, yajna, and then by that offering, by giving that result to Krishna, because he is the enjoyer, we connect with him. Yoga, that's connection, yoga. Yoga means, Prabhupada also, I was just reading this morning. Anyway, yoga means connection, to connect with Krishna. So this is the process of karma yoga, very simply described in the second, third chapters. And yajna has a special meaning to the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is that special meaning that yajna has to Mahaprabhu's followers? Yajna. Yajna is in the third chapter. He did. I heard it. So please. No more books? Really? Oh. No, there's Sankirtan books in there. Give him one of those. So, this is sort of an aside. The Sankirtan is our particular type of yajna, our particular type of devotional service. And when you say devotional service, what we're talking about is nishkama karma yoga. That's devotional service. Other kinds of mixed karma yoga can mean also mixed with some desire. But we aspire in devotional service, which means bhakti, we aspire for nishkama karma yoga. So to review, now that all the books are distributed, to review, how does this all relate to the environment? So why don't you give a review? First, why are these problems existing in the environment? Why do we have deforestation? Why do we have depletion of natural resources? Why is there pollution going on in the air and the water and so forth? Why is that? Can you tell me in one word? Greed. Okay. So that's nice. So what's Krishna's solution? How does Krishna analyze this? How does he analyze greed? Because many people say, don't be greedy. It says in the Bible, don't be greedy. The Pope complains. He says, corporations shouldn't be so greedy and suck all the resources out of nature. So he kind of blames the business people and corporations. But what about all of us who you know, the people. We are encouraging those corporations by using. So what is the analysis? What is Krishna? How does Krishna analyze this situation? Yes. And?
I don't see that the problem is solved.
You don't see that the problem is solved?
I mean, look, I have taste for sense gratification.
Yes.
So, you know, now you're saying I've got to do all this austerity and yoga and give away my money and all this. You know, how is that a solution?
How does that stop pollution?
No, how is that a solution?
Oh, how is that a solution? Yes. It's a solution. Well, it's a good point. How does doing all this yoga stop pollution? It stops pollution because it stops greed.
Yeah, but I'm saying, why would I do these?
Why would you do these things?
Yeah,
oh, that's an excellent point. Why? I don't know why I forgot to mention that. Yeah. So, yeah. It's because of enjoyment, right?
Yeah.
You're using all these things for in your enjoyment. Exactly, and you like to enjoy.
Yeah.
So this is the crux of the problem. Why did I forget to mention this in my lecture?
Stop enjoying.
Exactly. No, I'm not telling that. I don't mean to say that, because the soul enjoys. The soul is an enjoyer. Did you know that the soul is an enjoyer? Yeah. Okay. So when we do this karma yoga, when we do this bhakti yoga, when we sing about Krishna, when we look at the deity of Krishna, when we take Krishna prasad, in just a few minutes, when we take Krishna prasad, we enjoy. See, so the difference is that we are enjoying, we're redirecting our enjoyment from the enjoyment that's connected with this world of Maya, and we're directing our enjoyment to Krishna enjoyment, the enjoyment that's connected with the soul and the supreme. This is our process. It's a sensual process. So this is the problem of yoga, meaning that Krishna gives this analysis that we are soul, we have these senses, they're attracted to the sense objects. So this is the problem of yoga, that everyone is entrapped by Maya. But there's a very rigid and austere solution that Rupa Vilas is calling attention to. People don't want a rigid and austere solution. Just like sustainability. They say sustainability is the issue. Oh, well, go and live in the forest and live very austerely. That solution is only going to work for a few people. So if we say that the problem of yoga, I mean the problem of the senses, is that they're attracted to sense objects and the solution is austere yoga, no, that doesn't fly. So you say that in England? That doesn't fly. So that doesn't work. You have to engage the senses. It's called Vaishnava Tantra. It means to use the senses to serve Krishna. Not Tantra in the sense gratificatory ways. It means to use the senses, engage them in Krishna's service, and that redirects the mind. That's how the mind is captivated. Oh, yes, absolutely. So in the beginning, of course, there's naturally some discipline. We follow some basic disciplines to begin with. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. Ooh, he says. Sounds like somebody from New York. Ooh. So these are some basic restrictions that we begin with, and that immediately we substitute the no meat eating, we substitute with prasad. So we substitute these things with with Krishna sense gratification. And then as we advance in bhakti, nishkama karma yoga, in devotional service, we get more and more of a taste. As a matter of fact, our science of bhakti talks about this ruchi, taste, specifically addresses this issue. This is as one advances. Parang drishtva nivartate. Rasavarjang rasopyasa. No, you can't just give up the taste. You have to have the higher taste. So, this is my offering to you. You can use it if you think it's has any worth, but I personally feel I worked hard to write this little booklet, and I'm writing some further things that I feel that this is a valuable tool, because when I was young, we didn't learn these things in school. Now, the school children, at least in the U.S., and I think in the U.K. also, the school children are learning there are problems in the environment. We need to solve these problems. Everyone is learning. We have to recycle. We have to do all these things. These are all these solutions they're presenting. No one is saying we have to stop being greedy. They're saying when we run out of the resources, when we run out of oil, we'll have the sun. First we'll live from the earth, then we'll steal from the sun, then we'll steal from this place, and then when we're finished with this place, we'll go to Mars and we'll steal everything there. We're going to steal all throughout the universe. We'll steal, steal, steal for our purpose. We're going over time. Yes. Yes. Practicing devotional service. It is the environmental solution because devotional service is curbing greed. It's curbing sense gratification, therefore it's curbing greed. Practicing devotional service, starting with karma yoga, nishkama karma yoga, starting with karma yoga, yajna. Yajna is the component of karma yoga. Krishna says right in the first, second, third, fourth chapters of Bhagavad Gita. That's all we need. Second, third, fourth chapters of Bhagavad Gita, karma yoga, yajna, it curbs greed. That solves the environmental problems. What is yajna? Sankirtan yajna. Ribu. Prabhu.